It has finally happened. The Florida Gators are going to play for the national championship in baseball. We'll recap it all and all the exciting things that have happened this past week in Omaha. Not to mention the Florida Gators now are the hottest team in the country for recruiting in football. This is the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Yanes, your host for the In All Kinds Weather Forecast, here with Neil Shulman, my co-host. And tonight is going to be a really fun and exciting episode. Really just recapping only good news that's happening in Florida Gator land and in Gator Nation. So very excited to talk about that. But before we do, want to give a shout out to our sponsor of the show, Stingray Branding. These folks will put a sting into your marketing and will deliver results that will wow your clients. Whether it's web design, logo design, branding, graphic design, social media management, search engine optimization, marketing strategy, or mobile app design, Stingray Branding has you covered. If you or someone you know needs professional help in any of the above, here are three great reasons why you should choose Stingray Branding. One, it's a veteran-owned business. Can't think of a better way to properly thank those who serve our country than giving them business. Two, it's run by a UF alum and a big Gator fan. And three, they've got the personal stamp of approval from In All Kinds Weather, as they did our new logo, our new website. They did the Gator Good Foundation website, and they do all the marketing for the Charleston Gator Club. And they've still got more Gator-related projects on the horizon. So if you're listening to this pod and your brand or company needs any help in the aforementioned areas, rest assured that Stingray Branding will more than take care of you. To view their full list of services and rates, go to stingraybranding.com. All right, Neil, my heart rate has almost recovered. I think I've aged about 20 years in the last week watching Gator baseball. I probably have a few more gray hairs than I did entering last week. But it's all worth it. The Florida Gators are going to play for the national championship for the first time in 6 years. We still do not know who the opponent is as of the time of this recording, but we are hot off the presses of watching one of the most exciting finishes to a baseball game. And I feel like we probably could have said that three different times this past week alone. But here we are. We're in the final. We're going to face Wake Forest, the number one overall seed in the tournament, or have a rematch with the team we last faced in the College World Series final, the LSU Tigers. So, Neil, before we just get into the running through what's happened in Omaha, the games, and previewing what's still to come, just I want to know how you're feeling, because you're probably one of the biggest baseball fans in all of Gator Nation.
I'm going to Omaha, so I'm excited. I mean, there's no other way to feel. Watching the last three games that Florida has played have been some of the most exhilarating and or stressful moments of my sports watching career. I say sports watching because, you know, sports is not real life. There's no finances. There's no health on the line or anything like that. But as far as the world of sports goes, it's as stressful and as exciting as I can remember being in a long, long time. I mean, think about some of the big football wins over the years, like the Auburn win in 19, where Pete Ryan goes 88 yards down the sideline. I mean, yeah, that was exciting. That was fun. There was the big play that everyone remembers, but it didn't have that perennial sense of nervousness. And I don't want to necessarily say fear, but just, you know, knowing that things could go so well and have such high rewards for you, or if they didn't go well, your season was over. And it was the sadness of seeing such a tremendous Gator team not do what everyone wanted to do, that was win a national championship. So with all those games having all of those emotions attached to it, and then the way that each of those three games of baseball played themselves out, that was as stressful and as nerve-wracking of an experience as I can remember as a Gator fan. I think the only one that even comes close was game one against South Carolina in the 2011 championship series. And Florida lost that one. So it's good to finally have a win on the other end of that. But then again, I'm one of those few guys that loves baseball every bit as much as I love football. Obviously, there are so many more games into a season, so they don't, each individual one doesn't mean as much. But to me, the College World Series is every bit as intense as, you know, Florida, Georgia, when both teams are good, or the SEC championship game against Alabama. To me, that just means that much more. So yeah, now I'm going to Omaha. I'm going to watch them play for a national championship, which is just unbelievable to say. But Chris, we'll talk about the individual players and the games more, but this is the profile of a team that has gone through a lot. I mean, not this year, because this year they've won pretty much every series minus two, but 2 years ago, swept out of their own regional by bad teams, USF and South Alabama. Last year, couldn't get it done against Oklahoma. This year, they're on the ropes again against Texas Tech, but they bounced back and they haven't lost since. And that to me is just maybe a sign that, this is the team of destiny.
Yeah, and I think it's also a sign that it's just it's a lesson in life. You have to overcome things, sometimes go through failure and experience it multiple times in order to come out on the other side better. And this is a prime example of that, where this team, you know, experienced complete letdown 2 years ago in their own regional, swept out by two, I would say, very inferior programs and teams, more so than even this year's regional. And then last year, coming so close to beating Oklahoma, the team that actually made it to the final last year and was national runners up, only to lose to them in the final inning of that game. You know, it was two really bad instances, and this team this year came back determined on a mission to not let this happen and rewrite history for the program, and they've done that. They are going to play for a national championship. You know, we said at the top of the tournament, it was Omaha or bust. They've done that. I even went as far to say national championship or bust because I really believed in the potential of this team, and now they're playing for the national championship. It really is just exciting, and I think all of those lessons, all of the failures and the setbacks have led to this moment and have prepared them to overcome some adversarial moments like that have transpired in the last week, you know, in the College World Series in Omaha, back in the regional when they fell down a game, and then in some, you know, somewhat contentious moments, maybe in that first game against South Carolina in the Super Regional. They're just battle tested. They're ready to go, and it's because they overcame all of the failures and the setbacks like you talked about, Neil. So just a real lesson for people out there. You got to overcome some things sometimes in order to get to the other side.
How about the adversarial moments in game one of the College World Series against Virginia? That team, we were left for dead.
Yeah. Well, and I think let's go ahead and get into that now, because we're going to recap all three games. The Gators are 3-0 now in Omaha, playing for the national championship. That road started almost a week ago now. It's kind of hard to believe. It feels like it was a month ago, the way we've aged probably in the last week. But last Friday, we started off against the Virginia Cavaliers. We mentioned it was a rematch from the series 8 years ago, where Virginia did beat the Gators in the national semifinal. But this time around, the Gators, you know, were the higher seed, were the better team going in. And early on in the game, it felt like Florida could pull away, but they just didn't quite do it because of some poorly timed hitting. And then things started to fall off the wheels, and Florida fell behind, and they had to mount a pretty heroic comeback at the end. So, you know, Neil, give us your thoughts about that first game and kind of what you saw from Brandon Sproat. I think Brandon had a pretty good start in that one. It was a quality start, but it, you know, the bats just weren't there early enough to, you know, separate themselves.
I would say that Brandon Sproat's start against Virginia was pretty much in line with what he's given us throughout the course of the year. And that was a very good, but not elite, and probably not even great start. You want to, I mean, talk about maybe that fringe grade between very good and great. I can maybe give him that. It wasn't elite. He did, you know, fail to miss some barrels. He did give up some hard contact. Some balls were hit hard off of him. And then he kind of left with a mess on his hands, and it kind of got away from Florida there. And it looked like, with the way that Florida was hitting the ball or not hitting the ball, that a 4-1 deficit was game over, just because of the way that the first six innings had gone. But then BT Raiopelo with a home run. Now it's down to one run. Virginia bounces back, though. They score again, make it 5-3. Then Ty Evans. This guy doesn't have a lot of hits this year, but it feels like every single hit that he does have has been clutch. The walk-off homer against Miami to clinch that mercy rule. The game-winning home run against FSU in that game in Gainesville. He hit a mercy rule-inducing homer to beat Cincinnati in that game. And that wasn't really a game that was up for grabs, but still, it was a nice, you know, clincher of a moment for him. And now he's done it again in the College World Series to give Florida room to, you know, get back in the game. And then, of course, Langford hits the farthest home run in the history of that ballpark. Then we load the bases because their pitchers get the yips, and Luke Heyman puts a barrel on one, and it's enough for a sack fly. And I remember I couldn't believe what I had just seen, because it felt like there was that every universal sign was pointing toward Virginia to win that game until Langford hit the home run. And after Langford hit the home run to tie it up in the ninth, it switched. Like, it felt like, okay, Virginia had their chance. This was their game to win. They didn't do it. Something is going to go wrong for them now. Sure enough, bases are loaded. Luke Hayman, barrel, deep center field, and that's the game. So just an absolutely astonishing comeback for Florida to wake their bats up in the biggest way possible at the last possible moment. And a game that I don't think Gator baseball fans, or really even Gator football fans who have just tuned in to watch the baseball team because they know that they're in the mix for national title, are going to forget for a long, long time.
Yeah, and moreover, I think there's been a lot of struggles, and they've kind of continued on into the last couple of games. That heart of the order, you know, Wyatt Langford, Jack Caglione, BT Riopel, Josh Rivera, they haven't exactly been on their game completely in the batting order. They've struggled to get hits. It's really been the back end of that order, like you say, with by Tybo, that's been really timely for this and has pushed Florida. But in that moment, they came up big. And without them coming up big in that moment, we do not win that game. We go down 0-1. And everybody knows what happens in Omaha when you go down 0-1. And once again, this year, there isn't a team that went 0-1 that is still standing. So I think it could have been the death knell for this season had we lost that game. But they came up big. They got the big hits when they needed them. Tybo's home run, like you said. And then, of course, that moonshot by Wyatt Langford, where he just pimped the bat down. I mean, these guys got some real swag.
Chris, I thought he missed because I didn't see the ball. So I thought he swung and missed. And then I saw him just stand there and throw the bat. And I'm like, wait, no, he wouldn't be doing that if he missed.
Yeah.
Because the ball had left the screen so fast. The ball had hit his bat and then had been rocketed out of the screen so fast that I didn't see it. So I thought he swung and missed. And it turned out that the ball, I thought, landed in Iowa. It went across that river and landed in Iowa.
They showed a graph today, actually, of all the home runs that Florida's hit in Omaha since getting there. And they've hit 7 home runs while the rest of the teams combined have hit 10. So Florida almost has actually hit more home runs than all the other teams in Omaha combined, which is pretty astounding. And we talked about how difficult it is to hit home runs in this park. Yeah. And that particular, if you look at that graph, it's easy to see which one is his because it is so high in the air. And so far, I mean, it is truly a beauty. And at that point, when they tied the game, the momentum had swung. You just felt it. Like, I think you knew that this game was going to turn into Florida's favor. And being the home team that night was critical in that comeback, being able to walk it off and not have to face Virginia bats again, who were getting hot at the end of that game. So,
you ever play backyard baseball as a kid?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The computer game, Pablo Sanchez. Remember Aluminum Power Bat?
That's what happened.
That's what that was. If you know, you know. I'm taking y'all back. But if you know, you know. If you don't know, it's basically it's a cheat code where you hit the ball like literally 1,000 feet. So that's what happens.
He was sitting on that. He saved it for the very end.
What a time for it, man. But one more thing on this game, you know, everyone I'm sure who's been watching the World Series has been displeased to certain degrees with Jack Caglione at the plate. This was the one time he came through for us. He rocketed one through the shift to get on and start that little rally because Langford hits the home run to the bases are cleared. It was a solo shot, but bases empty. So you need base runners. You have to start a rally, quote unquote. And Jaitani started it with a rocket through that shift. So he hasn't done a lot. I should say, now that the pool play is over, he didn't do a lot in the pool play, but he did that, and that is something that's going to be remembered for a long time.
Definitely. So Jack Caglione scored the winning run in that game. Gators win 6-5 in walk-off fashion. They advance to the 1-0 game, where they face the Oral Roberts Golden Eagles, the Cinderella team of the NCAA tournament, the 4 seed that advanced out of the Super Regionals. And Florida, you know, they got off to a pretty good start in this game. They were up 5-1, I believe, midway through the third or the fourth inning. Hurston Waldrop struggled with the command early in this game, but he still figured out how to hit the zone, get his strikeouts. He ended up with double-digit strikeouts once again, another vintage Hurston Waldrop performance. Now, Gators are up 5-1. They're cruising. Everybody's saying this lead is safe, and to be honest, I fell victim to it. I thought it was too, but they had a couple of instances where they had runners in scoring position and they could not get the hits that would have given us some of those nice insurance runs. And Oral Roberts came back in this game. They got it down to a two-run game when all hell broke loose and almost one of the big-time meltdowns by Kevin O'Sullivan nearly happened, costing the game. Neil, just kind of take us through your thoughts of this game and what you thought of the whole mound visit situation that led to Sully having to make a change midstream.
So I, at first, obviously was going through all the stages of grief, right? Like I was Kubler-Rossing right in front of my TV, all five stages, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, in the span of about a minute. Surrender, Cobering, all of that. But Sully said in the post game that he, you know, he owned up, he made a mistake, and he told his team that. And that's great, right? Like as a coach, when you mess up, you tell your team, you know, I messed up, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, we're going to move on from this together. But something didn't seem like it was really his mistake, because I seem to remember him going out and asking the umpire the previous time he'd gone out to talk with his pitcher. He stopped for about a second and turned his head to the umpire, and his mouth was moving on the telecast. You could see he was saying something to the umpire. And I'm thinking what might have happened was he had asked the umpire how many mound visits he had left. And he was told a number, and he just kept going on. He didn't stop. It wasn't really a long thing. He just turned his head to the side for about a second and a half. His mouth moved a little bit. It was like a 3 or 4 word question. And he got his answer evidently and kept going on. But I think that was him asking how many mound visits he had and him getting an answer. Now, it might have been that the ump lost count and Sully was given the wrong number and correctly counted the wrong number and went out thinking he had the extra one. The umpire might have also told him that, you know, he only had so many left, and Sully then forgot how to count, and that was his mistake. But it feels like Sully is almost, I don't know, Chris, like I've never seen that in my life, but it feels to me like he was like he was on top of it at some point, and somewhere along the way, wires got crossed by somebody and incorrect information entered Sully's head, whether by Sully's own fault or the umpire who he stopped to talk to for a second and a half or two. And that was what led him to miscount. And by the way, shout out to him for that shirt today against TCU. I can count to six. That was an absolutely all-time self-troll. But I feel like Sully was counting correctly. He was on top of it and was given incorrect information. Like that feels like the prevailing truth here. And I guess he could have double checked with another ump. Maybe he just didn't want to make that big a deal of it. I don't know, but I know that the previous time he went out to talk to his pitcher, he turned his head away from everyone else. Like it was not at the pitcher. It was not at the first baseman. It was not at his dugout. He turned his head in the direction of home plate and said something. His mouth moved. And I don't know. Like I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm not going to claim that the umpires intentionally screwed Florida over in that way or anything, but I feel like that maybe it may not have been Sully's fault. I guess we'll never know, but in any case, Sully took responsibility for it. And you know, as the rule says, you can only go to the mound six times. The seventh or more time, you have to yank the pitcher out of the game, which resulted in Brandon Neely basically getting ejected. That's essentially what it was. He got ejected from the game because that's what the rule said had to happen. And Florida wound up going to Cade Fisher. And I've never seen Sully as nervous as I saw him in that ninth inning.
Or in that eighth inning, because the bases were loaded in that situation. It was a two-run game, and they got the fly ball out to left field. And then the next inning, it was a one-run game, two outs. And that one, I think was like a one-out or two-out rally. It was a one-out rally. We got the first out, and they ended up getting the bases going. They ended up loading them eventually, though, after we had gotten the second out. And then the fly ball to one of their better hitters concluded the game. And the rest is history. And I don't know, Neil. I think that obviously there was some miscommunication. There's no doubt about it. The only reason why I'm thinking it might have really been Sully's fault is because Sully in the dugout was very calm and composed. Now, that could be because he didn't want to get ejected and go off on the umpire and then really cause a scene and make the situation even worse. But he did collect himself, and you could just tell he was biting his nails down to the nubs. He was very, very, very nervous. But when this team, championship teams have championship moments. And along the ride here, this is one of those championship moments where they could have folded. They could have, you know, just allowed the momentum to continue to the Oral Roberts side, but they didn't. They got the fly ball from Cade Fisher, who, by the way, and Soli has said this multiple times, is a star in the making. Cade Fisher will be probably a day one or two starter next season on this pitching staff. He has that it factor. And this is incredible experience for him now on the biggest stage. He even pitched today and did very well once again against TCU. But that was – I don't think you can conjure up a more difficult situation for a young freshman pitcher. College World Series, game on the line, bases loaded twice. And by the way, when you come in the eighth, you're not fully warm. You barely threw any pitches in the bullpen. You have to throw on the mound. You only get so many on the mound before you have to get going again. I don't think you could think of a more difficult situation, and he overcame it, and the Gators get away with a 5-4 victory over Oral Roberts, and we moved on to the semifinal.
Chris, when I said before, I don't think I'd ever seen so much stress or so much nerve-wrackery in the span of a week. That this game was the worst offender. This was the most stressful game I've ever watched of Gator baseball. This one game tops South Carolina in 2011 just because of that mound visit situation. Without that, I don't think it would have. But because of there was that on top of it, I mean, I don't even know. How do you compare that versus making three errors on one single play to lose the game against South Carolina? I don't know. But, I mean, there were so many plays. And this is part of why I just love baseball so much. Because, no, it's not the same. It's not the up-and-down action you get like in basketball or soccer where it's constant movement and something's always happening. But to me, it's the pauses in between pitches that just up the tension, that just increase the nerves, that makes it so much fun. Because there's so much riding on every pitch. Obviously, you do this for 60, 70 games a year. And yeah, it can get boring when you're in a, you know, 16-3 game against FAMU. So yeah, I get that. But like playoff baseball, College World Series, postseason baseball, to me is the most exciting thing in the world. And I had to think about this long and hard to make sure I wasn't a prisoner of the moment, but rewatching that game with so many plays coming down to such tiny fractions of measurements. Wyatt Langford missing a home run by about 4 inches. You know, Josh Rivera hitting a home run that's fair by about 4 inches. Oral Roberts with the double in the ninth inning that just it lands down and kicks perfectly up off the chalk, 3 inches to the 3/10 of an inch to the left, and it's probably a foul ball. And there's a play at first where there's a BT Ryapel throw down to try to pick off a runner. Tag is slapped down, maybe a 10th of a second too late. There's a throw over to first where Cags has to stretch, and the bottom of the tip of his toe is just touching the base. And if he has to reach up any higher, if the throw is an inch or two higher, he has to jump. His foot would have come off the base. There were so many plays like that throughout the course of the game that went one way or another, and just Florida got one more. Florida got one more than the other. And even the fly ball at the very end, if that ball is 30 feet left or right, Oral Roberts wins the game. Like that's how fragile the sport of baseball is. And to me, like that's what makes it the most exciting thing, especially when you're this deep in the postseason with games that mean everything.
Yeah, and that's why if you look at Kevin O'Sullivan, he's been to the College World Series more than any other manager or team since 2008. And he's only won one championship out of that span. It's difficult to win a championship. And sometimes in that span, he was 0-2 out of the tournament. So it is very difficult. And the best team does not always win in Omaha. And it's very rare that, as we see now, there's a collision course potentially between the top two teams in the country playing each other in the final. It's very rare. And it's because of those moments, like you say, Neil, little things can go one way and it sways the game completely. And right now, everything has gone Florida's way to this point. And thank goodness, because any one of those goes the other way, I think Florida is in a much different situation today. Now, semifinal today, we just finished watching the game not too long ago. This was a pitching duel. This was a pitching defensive duel. 5 runs total was scored in this game. Florida got off to a fast start on a Josh Rivera 2-run shot. Josh Rivera kind of carried the team today and tried to probably put a few, probably should have scored a few more runs with Josh Rivera's help, but just did not get the hits and when runners were in scoring position. Jack Caglione was, some moments acting like Jack Tani, Yoshino Tani. And in other moments, he was acting like Wild Man from the Cleveland back in the day, the Cleveland Indians. It was some wild pitches out there, and he was struggling with command in the zone. Although he did settle down, he got out of a jam in the first inning, was able to go 4 1/3 until Soley pulled him for Ryan Slater, who pitched a pretty good game, and then it was by committee at that point moving forward. The Gators had to overcome, once again, a little bit of adversity in the 9th inning, where TCU tied the game in the 8th, and then in the top of the 9th, Florida was able to get an infield single RBI. Cade Curlin runs it out. Gators get the run. They go up 3-2. And then the bottom of the 9th, I think everybody's heart stopped for a good couple of seconds. That fly ball at the end where Michael Robertson leaps at the wall and gets the final out. The Gators advance to the national championship. So, Neil, give us your thoughts and analysis on the semifinal today.
To me, the most amazing thing was that, I mean, Tyler Shelnut, to me, is the hero. He's the MVP of the game. Josh Rivera, we knew his bat was there. I mean, all the credit in the world goes to him. He is, by every account, a star. He gets all that ink. He deserves all that praise. That's all well and good. Tyler Shelnut coming through, again, that part of the order that you just – don't expect, that they're not, these aren't the guys that are highlighted on your opponent's scouting reports as the guys, you know, don't let this guy beat you. Like for TCU, for example, that's Trey Richardson. Hey, Florida pitchers, Jack Caglione, Brandon Neely, Ryan Slater, Philip Abner, he didn't go in, but you know what I'm saying? Cade Fisher, this guy, Trey Richardson, he's not the one to beat you. Make someone else beat you. For Florida, that was, you know, Rivera, I guess, Wyatt Langford. I suppose you could say that about Caglione, even though he has kind of cooled off a bit at the World Series. But those are the guys you know about. And Ryapel, I guess, because he's been hitting home runs at a very high clip recently. But Tyler Shelnut is not that guy that is the one with bold on his scouting report saying, this guy is not the one that should be beating you. No, but he was the one that did. He was the one that hit the double to lead off the 9th inning. And then he was replaced on second base by Michael Robertson, who wound up scoring the winning run and then coming up with the play and center field to end the game. So, I mean, to win a national championship, Chris, you got to have guys that you just don't expect to be stars, step up and be stars of the moment. Like, obviously, no one's going to say Michael Robertson is – you know, was snubbed of an All-American status. No one's saying he's going to be a first-round draft pick this year. But he stepped up for the Florida Gators on a team where he is by no means the star. He is, I mean, he's not even starting. He was not in the starting lineup today because he is not one of the 9 bats that Kevin O'Sullivan deemed to be the best. And he came through for the Gators, not with his bat, but with the play deep in center field and by scoring that game-winning run. Tyler Shelnut is also not a guy that was, again, like I just said, he's not one of the guys that was expected to be the hero for Florida. But he came through, put a barrel on a baseball, found a gap, leadoff double, guy in scoring position. And then Cade Curlin, of course, with the speed to leg out that infield single, which wound up getting the winning. It was the winning run. It's the go-ahead run at the time. But the winning run eventually for Florida. And just, I mean, again, Cade Curlin has been cold in the NCAA tournament. He hasn't been doing what he did earlier in the season. So Florida had 3 guys do different things to step up and win them the game when they were not the ones that were the most dangerous to the opponent. That, to me, is a sign of a championship team, because every team is going to need someone like that, or some ones, or some people like that, plural, to step up and fill those roles. And Florida hasn't.
Yeah, they did. They've had everybody step up when they've needed to. And you look at Michael Robertson, he was the pinch runner, scored the winning run, and then makes the play of the tournament in the field. Probably the best defensive play yet in Omaha this year. That is the kind of effort we need from everybody to win a championship, and we've gotten it. I think every player can say they've had a moment in this run to Omaha where they've contributed in some way to help this team get to where they are now, where they're playing this weekend for a national championship. That is really special. This is a special team. This is one probably maybe my favorite baseball team. You know, this might be my favorite Gator baseball team to ever play. There's a special place, obviously, for those 2017 guys. They overcame a lot of, you know, fallbacks and setbacks in Omaha, where they got close a couple of times, fell short, but came back and finally pulled it off that year. I don't know. There's just something about this team that is just really fun to watch. They've been fun to watch from the first pitch of the season all the way to now. And I really, really hope it culminates into something really special in a couple of nights. So the Gators will play for the national championship. It all begins Saturday night on ESPN. Game two will be Sunday afternoon. And if necessary, a game three on Monday. So let's get into it, Neil. Let's go ahead and predict. Right now, to LSU and Wake Forest are playing. I'll get you a score update here in a second. But Neil, kind of give me your thoughts, preview what you think is going to happen in the World Series final.
Well, if it's LSU, they're going to be out of pitching because they're going to have to exhaust pretty much all their best arms today and tomorrow if they were to win those two games. I mean, I guess they could use Paul Skeens in a bit of a closing situation if it got to that point. I mean, they have bats. I mean, LSU has bats like Tommy White and Paul Cruz. They can definitely – or not Paul Cruz. What's his first name for LSU? I'm blanking on it right now. I can't – Dylan Cruz. I don't know why I thought I was Paul Skeens. I'm tired. It's been a long, long day. I woke up at 5 o'clock to start my work tonight because I had to leave early to watch the game. But, yeah, Dylan Cruz, Tommy White, they have some bats. So it's not going to be easy by any means. But to me, they're the preferred opponent because Wake is just a team that does everything so, so well. They can pitch. They can hit. They can hit for power. They can run the base as well. Their fielding is tremendous. I mean, they can get sneaky too. Like, they can get sneaky and time pick you off if you're not careful. So they're just a team that doesn't really have a flaw. So I would prefer a rundown LSU pitching staff than a Wake Forest team without really any weakness. So I do think that LSU is going to not make it out. I think that they might take a game, and I'm hoping that they do so that they can beat up Wake Forest pitching staff a little bit. But I'm predicting that it ultimately will be 1-2 Wake versus Florida for the ship.
Yeah, and as we are recording live right now, it is the top of the second inning. Wake Forest is up to bat. They have one on, no outs, and the score is 0-0. So I agree, Neil. I think we need to root for both these teams to go deep into pitching, get to that second game. Florida's coming in fully rested. They're going to be able to throw Brandon Sproat on Saturday night, Hurston Waldrop on Sunday. And I'm hoping we finish it there. I really do. I think you try to finish it there. I think Jack Caglione could do another start, obviously, if we needed him to, in a game three, winner take all. But I think you want to avoid that situation. I think you'd much rather win game one with Sproat like he has been the last two starts, and then you go in and then throw Hurston Waldrop for the winner take all game. I think that's the best case scenario. I mean, you give me a 1-0 lead with Hurston Waldrop pitching against a LSU or Wake Forest team that has exhausted all of their options. I think Florida will cruise in that series if that's the way it indeed goes. I think a lot of it does depend on how these teams perform here tonight, and then if they do have to play in an additional game. So I guess we'll go ahead and do some predictions. We said we would do that. Neil, we both predicted Florida to get to the final. We both predicted that Florida would face LSU. We didn't want to go as far to make a prediction, and we've been pretty on with our predictions. You predicted Florida would drop one game but make the final. I predicted they would go 3-0, and they did, but it was not an easy 3-0. I don't think it was as easy as I thought it was going to be. And we both, like I said, we both had LSU. So, Neil, what do you think? Who do the Gators face, and do they bring home the national title to Gainesville?
I think that they're going to face Wake Forest, and I think that it's going to go 3 one way or another. I don't see either team sweeping the other. Hurston Waldrop has just been nasty. So I think that if Florida is going to win the series, They're going to need Waldrop to do exactly what he's been doing. They cannot afford an off game from Waldrop. Game one's a bit of a scary scene just because Brandon Sproat has been very slow out of the gate. He's not been the guy to jump off and just start firing strikes in there and missing bats and getting you a couple of zeros to start the game. Usually he's getting tagged pretty good early in games, and LSU has an offense that can knock him out pretty quick if he's not careful. So I think that LSU will, or not LSU, that Wake Forest will win game one. I think Florida will win game two. And then it just depends what we get in game three. Do we get good Cags? Do we get wild Cags? That's what it comes down to. I don't know that I trust Florida's bats to hit a couple of homers against this Wake pitching staff. It's going to be a much better staff than we saw from TCU. And by the way, shout out to Cole Klecker and Ben Abel. Those are two very, very good young pitchers that TCU has there. They're going to have futures, I think, in the game of baseball, even beyond TCU. So shout out to them. But Wake Forest has even better pitchers. So Florida's just going to have to be very, very, very timely with their hits. They're going to have to score runs when they have guys in scoring position. And they're going to have to get great pitching from Cags. Does Florida get good Cags or bad Cags? I mean, that's a coin flip proposition. I don't think that you'd say he was great today, but he did his job. I mean, he was okay. So
only surrendered one run. I mean, that's, if your starter pitches four and a third and it's only surrenders a run, that's what you need. That's
yeah, but Wake's offense is better. Wake's sure. offense is way better than TCU's is. So Trey Richardson aside, Wake Forest has much, much more power, and they just have a better average. They hit for more. They hit for more bases. They hit for more power than TCU. So he has to be on his game in that game three. I'm going to go 51-49 Florida, just because, Florida has now won three one-run games in a row. And I think that has to mean something, that this team knows how to gut out these close wins when it matters most. So I think because of that ability to just gut out these close one-run games, these nail biters so consistently, I think you got to give the edge to Florida. Even actually just now, as Wake Forest takes the lead 2-0, as I say that. So that a point in favor of us facing Wake. But yeah, Florida, I think we'll get it done 2-1.
All righty. Well, I agree. I think Wake Forest is going to be the team we face. And just the way that the game is trending tonight, I think they actually get it done tonight. You can just kind of tell that the momentum is on their side, and it's similar to how Florida was today. They got up and you know, we gave up the lead, but we figured it out. And the Wake Forest is just, I think, a better team than LSU, and they will be the team we face. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this. I think the Gators sweep. I predicted the sweep so far. I think they're going to get the sweep. They're going to go on a pretty incredible tear, if you think about it, if they pull this off, because that would have mean they'd have not lost a game since the second game of the regional.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to predict Florida to win 10 games a row?
Yes. I'm gonna go on a limb, and I'm going to say it. And it's really the starting pitching. I you've mentioned it. Brandon Sproat has not pitched his A game yet. This is Brandon Sproat's final game as a Gator. He will never pitch again in the orange and blue. He gets the ball for Saturday night. I think he pitches a gem. I don't even think the Gator hitters have been played their best. I think they are going to finally show up in the championship series. They just have the team of destiny written all over them. I think they get there. I think they get this done. I think they get it done in a sweep. And the only reason I'm predicting the sweep is because I really believe in our front two pitchers. Hurston Waldrop, that will be pitching Sunday afternoon, and Brandon Sproat the night before. That is the reason why I'm predicting the Gators to sweep the final and get it done. Would it shock me, obviously, if Wake Forest won or if this thing went to three games? Absolutely not. Wake Forest is the number one team in the country. They've been the number one team in the country more than anybody else this season. But the Gators, I think, have had a tougher road here. It's like going through the gauntlet that is the Southeastern Conference. They've overcome a lot more adversity in the NCAA tournament, and these guys have overcome a lot of adversity, as we mentioned, over the last couple of years. They get it done tonight, or they get it done this weekend. The Gators will win their second national championship in sweep fashion.
Okay. We're on record. We both say Florida's going to win, and Chris, you are the one that calls me the pessimist, but I do have Florida winning.
You do. And look, I totally understand where you're coming from predicting a close series. I think these games will probably be honestly close the way this has been trending. It would be pretty funny if it was like another one score, a one run game
for Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I just think that they're due for a big offensive game, big offensive output. I really don't think six runs is the most this team's capable of in this run. I think they could give us a little bit more, and I think they will in the series. They may even need it. You never know. But I think the Gators get it done. They win the national championship.
Beware of Tommy Hawk for Florida, or for Wake, I should say. If that's going to be the matchup, that's the guy that I'm most worried about. I mean, he's hot. I think he actually just had the RBI today to give them the 2-0 lead over LSU. But he's the guy that you don't want to have beat you.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's going to be a really great pitching duel, pitching matchup, and hitting lineup for both teams. So we will wait to see it. It all begins Saturday night on ESPN. And with that, Neil, we have some other exciting news to share with Gator Nation. Unless you've been living under a rock, Florida is the hottest recruiting team in football in the country right now. And they have taken college football by storm. Blue Chip Billy is finally living up to the name. But before we get to that, a quick shout out from our partners. First, we're proudly partnered with the Gator Good Foundation, the nonprofit organization that works to send an underprivileged Gator fan to the swamp. For those of you that are new listeners, the Gator Good Foundation collects donations from fans and uses it to bring someone to his or her first ever Florida Gator football game. You believe you or someone you know is worthy of the honor for next season? Please email us at gatorgoodfoundation@gmail.com. And also, we are partnered with Alma Mater. Please go to our website, allkindsofweather.com. Click the top link, and you'll be able to buy some incredible merch. They've been dropping all that national championship merch that we've been winning in golf, track and field. And when we win in baseball, they will have national championship baseball merch. So please go check out Alma Mater, buy some championship merch, celebrate the Florida Gators' success, and support our NIL athletes in the process. So please go click that link at the top of the header on allkindsofweather.com and buy from Alma Mater today. All right, Neil. The Florida Gators, like I mentioned, are the hottest team in college football for recruiting. Going into last weekend on the 247 rankings, we were a measly 22nd place. And on three, we were outside of the top 10. Florida had just lost the commitment of Austin Simmons, which we can get into in a little bit if we want to discuss that. I think we probably want to talk a little bit more about the positive things because we have so much more that overshadows that. But the Florida Gators lost commitment the week before to Chauncey Bowens to Georgia on his official visit there. They then lost Austin Simmons, their recruit that was going to reclassify and did reclassify to 2023, who's going to take the spot of Jaden Rashada. And then he flipped to Ole Miss because apparently the Southeastern Conference, or specifically the Florida Gators, have too hard of a schedule. And also they believe more in Jaden Rashada. That, those are not my words. Those are
DJ Lagway.
DJ Lagway, I'm sorry. Those are the words from Austin Simmons' dad. So, and to make this even better, we're going to be playing Ole Miss next year in the Swamp. And I highly doubt, honestly, Simmons is the quarterback for that game, considering the deep depth that Lane Kiffin has assembled there. But nonetheless, he felt that that was the better opportunity for him. And unfortunately, that means the Gators will be going into the 2023 season only with three scholarship quarterbacks. They have taken on a couple of preferred walk-ons there, but it is not an ideal situation. So Graham Mertz will need to stay healthy. He will need to perform adequately well for the Gators to have a successful run this year before DJ Lagway arrives in 2024. Now, the 2024 class took off last week with the commitment of Mike Williams and Neil, wait for it, Noel Portenjagen. That's how you say it, Noel Portenjagen. I got a Google Translate to get it for me. And actually, it translates to the Gate Finder. For those out there that would like to know that, the Gate Finder, it's actually a Swedish root word, but he committed to the Florida Gators. I think it's very fitting to have a Gate Finder be our offensive lineman for our team. So that was that started the dominoes somewhat, but then the official visits came in. And we got a commitment from somebody that we had said was on commit watch. We had called it out on our recruiting handle, at the In All Kinds of Weather recruiting handle. Amir Jackson finally committed just a couple of hours after the decommitment of Austin Simmons, the nearly top 100 tight end prospect out of Portal, Georgia, 6'5", 210 pounds, great size, great speed, projects to be a tight end at the next level, commits to the Florida Gators. This is a big win. A guy we got right out of Kirby Smart's backyard and somebody that was highly considering committing to a school like Miami. Neil, give us your thoughts on Amir Jackson. You did drop an article on the website that everybody should go read. But what does this commitment mean for the Florida Gators?
Well, all right, first things first. There will never will be another Kyle Pitts again because he's a one of a kind and he's a unicorn and he's just a rare, rare blend of speed and size and receiver skills. But everyone's chasing that now. College football is at a point now where everybody sees what he did at Florida and they go, well, I can land the next Kyle Pitts. I can be the next guy like that. So tight ends are now being grown to be like that. And I'm not going to make the comparison of Amir Jackson to Kyle Pitts, but he is a mismatch nightmare for opponents in that he is extremely athletic. He plays basketball. He plays basketball very well for his high school in Portal, Georgia, which, side note, that is hysterical that he comes from a town called Portal, Georgia. And he just has a way of getting open. He has a way of making big blocks when he has to. He's got the ability to go up and get the football in traffic, bring it down with some guys all over him. I mean, there are two plays on his huddle tape where he's being pretty blatantly interfered with, and he still comes down with the ball anyway. And you know, he runs the ball a little bit. He gets the ball on some of those end arounds or jet sweeps that we saw Ricky Pearsall do for Florida last year. He's very successful on those. He's not easy to bring down on the open field. So in terms of getting a tight end who can do more than just the prototypical, like pre-2010 job duties of a college football tight end, he's pretty good. I mean, I think Florida was content with what they got from Jonathan Odom last year when he was healthy, but he wasn't a game changer at tight end the way that I think Amir Jackson projects to be. He's 6'4", 223 with wide receiver skills, but he's built like a linebacker. He's built like a tight end, I guess you could say. It's why they have him on 247 classified as an athlete. But this is someone that if you know he comes to Florida, all the obvious disclaimers, assuming he stays healthy, assuming that, you know, Florida doesn't get someone else bigger through the portal. This is someone I think that can be very, very successful for the Gators offense.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it was a commitment Florida needed to have just to get the momentum going. I think fans, it's been a roller coaster ride with Billy Napier of emotions with recruiting. And there's been a lot of ups and downs since he's gotten here in that department, especially in the realm, I think a lot, in large part due to NIL efforts. Florida made a big push this offseason to get that corrected. It seems to be now headed in the right direction thanks to the efforts at Florida Victorious, which we have chronicled multiple times here on this program. And if you have not joined, certainly this is a great time to join Florida Victorious to continue this momentum as you can now see the difference that it is making in the recruiting abilities of this program. But getting Amir Jackson, you look at Florida has not really had a big-time tight end prospect to commit. Russ Callaway was brought in this offseason to replace William Pegler, who did not bring a tight end in the 2023 recruiting class. So it was paramount that we bring at least one in. I still think we might even target a second one, potentially, you know, like an Eccles or an Odom who have visited in the last couple of weeks at Florida. But I do think getting Amir Jackson was huge in that department to help that room out and get things going. So that was the first commitment for the Gators of the weekend. And then it continued to roll. We've got the commitment from another person we put on commit watch, and that was defensive lineman Nezir Jackson, another prospect out of the state of Georgia hailing from Dublin. This is a 6'4", 300-pound prospect, projects as that interior defensive tackle that Florida needs in that interior side of the ball in the trenches. A real big guy there. And then Florida got another trench monster to commit for the Gators, and that was by way, of Amarius Williams. Now he projects more as that kind of that strong side defensive end. He's 6'2 and a half, 255 pounds from Clinton, North Carolina. This was a surprise commitment. I mean, Florida had stood well, was in a good place, but I don't think he was somebody anybody was expecting him to pop on this visit. So it was kind of surprising that he did, but for those that may not have seen the video yet, this was all transpiring at the Spurrier's restaurant. So we got the commitment from Nasir Johnson. Then Amarius Williams follows that up and commits to Florida over the likes of Penn State, Tennessee, Georgia. Big get for the Gators here. So this is a prospect who's in the top 200, and we get him. Then the surprise commitment that nobody was expecting. Many believed he was trending to Michigan or even his home state of Maryland, but linebacker Aaron Chile, 6'3", 220 pounds, projects as that interior linebacker, committed to Florida right there and then in the room during dinner, in front of Coach Spurrier, in front of all those recruits, does it. And I think it surprised even his dad, who was kind of, a lot of reports are that he was favoring Michigan or preferred Michigan, but picked the Gators, just believed in what they were doing. And Neil J. Bateman is the number two recruiter in the entire country right now on 247. So the work that he has done in this linebacker room is nothing short of astounding. And it only got better, as we're about to chronicle later Monday night. But this commitment from Aaron Chile was a surprise. Nobody projected him to flip, commit to Florida. Many believed he was headed up to Ann Arbor to play his college football. But now the Gators have a star-studded linebacker room in Miles Graham, Adarius Hayes, and Aaron Chiles. And don't get it twisted, they still want Chris Jones, who visited a couple weeks ago. They would take Chris Jones if he does want to commit to Florida. So we're going to wait to see on that one, but that would be truly the icing on the cake in that room there to add another interior linebacker, because Florida needs to make that linebacker room in order to make a difference in the Austin Armstrong scheme. Now, Aaron Chile commits. That caps off the visits from the weekend, but then they kept pouring in. The next commitment was the big one from Micah Boyeru at a Fairburn, Georgia Creekside High School. This was a win over Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, the ranking might not indicate it at the moment, but Micah visited Georgia last week. The coaches were actually pressing for the commitment on the spot there. He said no, he wanted to visit Florida, and then commits to Florida off his visit. This is a huge win, a head-to-head win over Georgia, and unfortunately for Micah, he might not get the bump that he truly deserves because he didn't commit to the Georgia Bulldogs, because we all know the outlets love giving that nice, favorable Georgia bump after the commit happens. But I do expect, of all the three-star prospects currently committed to the Gators, I think he's the most likely to actually get up to that blue-chip status before no time. And if you watch his tape, he's a complete grader. He draws double teams, which helps other guys get into the backfield, penetrate, get to the run carrier or the quarterback, and hurries them. He definitely will project as that nose tackle at the next level. He's somewhere around that range of 350. Some reports say up to 370, even 390. He's going to have to get in the college weight room, get in that strength and conditioning program with Mark Hockey and that nutrition program. But when he does, I think he's got a really solid skill set that is going to contribute fairly quickly in the SEC, just given his size and some of the ability that he shows on tape. And Micah plays at the highest level of Class A ball in the state of Georgia for high school, which has quickly become, over the last several years, one of the best in the country. So huge get there, getting Micah Boyeru over the Georgia Bulldogs. They truly did want him to commit to their program. And then, continuing this, the status of these trench monsters, Marcus Mascol, offensive tackle out of South Gwinnett, in the Atlanta area, committed to the Gators over the LSU Tigers. Another commitment that was many believe was trending to LSU, similar to how Chiles was trending to Michigan, commits to Florida, and now the Gators have three offensive linemen committed for next cycle. They definitely, I think, will take probably one or two more in the class, maybe like a Ty Hilton who visited recently. There's also a couple of other big names out there in that blue chip realm that I think Florida would like to bring in some of that higher end talent. But like Neil and I have talked about before, there are not as many blue chip offensive linemen out there to take. So this isn't a bad take. And if you look at the offer list of a guy like Marcus Mescal, it is very impressive. Plenty of SEC offers, including those of Brian Kelly and LSU, where many believed he was trending, but off his visit was incredibly impressed and committed to Florida the next day when he returned home. Now, this is where it gets even better. The revenge factor comes in. As many people probably saw on Twitter, Lane Kiffin was getting a little zesty, choosing some violence after that Austin Simmons commitment. He put out a tweet that said, good vibes this weekend, and it was a screenshot of Tom Petty and his greatest hits. Definitely a direct shot at the Gators. Now, of course, his staff didn't waste any time and sulk. They had all those commitments lined up, ready to go. This is a staff that truly understands how the news cycle works. So they took it a step further. They got a guy out of the state of Mississippi, Jamonte Waller, and they convinced him to abandon SIP. He abandoned SIP.
You're welcome for that hashtag, by the way.
Yeah, Neil coined the phrase abandon SIP, as obviously Lane Kiffin puts out come to the SIP when he is announcing a commitment. That's his way of doing so. But Jamonte Waller, who was potentially trending to Ole Miss, and I'm not sure if I truly believe it because Lane Kiffin isn't exactly known as an elite recruiter. Don't be fooled, but even though he's pulled in a lot of good transfers, Jamonte Waller committed to Florida off his visit Monday night. And the Gators now have an elite, elite edge rusher, outside linebacker coming to the Gainesville next season. This is a guy that, if you watch his tape, just absolutely has an incredible swim move. I think this is somebody that makes a difference quickly in that defensive room. You know, everyone's going to talk about his height. He's a little bit over 6 foot, maybe a little bit under 6'1", but he's 230 pounds. He's quick. He's fast. He can get off the edge, get to the quarterback, get to the ball carrier. He's got a great film, and all the other outlets, two outlets have him rated as a 5-star. Rivals has him as a 4, top 100 player. On3 is the only one that kind of is the outlier, has him as a 3-star. I think that changes. And once he gets that bump, I could potentially see him becoming a consensus 5-star, giving Florida their third 5-star committed in the class. So, Neil, the Gators are the hottest team in the country in recruiting now. They are now number 2 on On3, only behind the Georgia Bulldogs. They are number 3 on 247 behind the Georgia Bulldogs and the Michigan Wolverines. They have the third highest at player average in 247. It would not surprise me if very soon, and we'll get into it in a second, Florida is the number 2 team in the country on both ranking systems. That's incredible. We said Florida had to have an elite class this year. They have an elite class now, building and then some. There are so many different ways this class can go. And yes, they have to sign, but you got to get them committed first. And we took that big step this weekend.
And I guess I'll play the role of pessimist and remind everyone that even if they do sign, it doesn't necessarily mean it's over, as we saw with a certain quarterback. But
look, but really quick, Neil, on that point, I think that because of the efforts of Florida Victorious and the NIL efforts that we've got now, some of those things should be alleviated, you know?
Oh, sure. I'm just saying that some Florida fans are scarred, and I don't have a real counterpoint to it because we have not signed a class since then. Now, once we do, once we have that data, once we have signed a class, we can say, hey, look, we signed a class since then with Florida Victorious. Then I think it changes a bit. But right now, I understand the skepticism. But I mean, look, there's no debating that Florida is currently the hottest team in the country right now on the recruiting trail. And it's just it happens so fast. It escalated so quickly, to quote Ron Burgundy. It all just exploded. And Chris, you said, well, it all started when they all came this weekend, right? To me, I just find it a little odd and a little curious that this avalanche all started just after Lane Kiffin took away Austin Simmons and did that little, you know, stick your tongue out and wiggle your ears routine at us. I find that a little curious timing there, because we've talked on this show previously about, and really I've talked about it, and you've not disagreed with this point, but my point of frustration with Napier, for all I like about him, for all the patience I'm prepared to have with him, My biggest criticism so far has been his inability to close, his inability to get aggressive and get personal and lock it down and finish a recruitment and get it over with. Do not let that kid walk out of your city without a commitment. Do not let that kid go take a visit to a rival. No, you get him to commit to you and you shut it down. Now, obviously, there's a lot to be said about his authenticity, about how genuine he comes off, about how he's not a pushy salesman, which does appeal to a lot of kids. I get it. I respect it. I appreciate it. And I think it is a good recruiting tactic for a lot of kids. But it's pretty clear to me that something changed in his demeanor this weekend. And if it was Lane Kiffin pissing him off, if it was someone getting in his ear about Lane Kiffin trolling him, that pissed him off. If it was something that had anything to do with Lane Kiffin's little celebratory dance on what he thought was Florida's grave, then I say thank you, Lane Kiffin. Thank you, because you lit a fire under Billy Napier, and we now have the biggest treasure trove of commitments I think we've ever had, Chris. I mean, we've signed number one classes before, but we have not had a weekend. We have not had a 72-hour period where we have pulled in such a rich gold mine of recruits. And even if this had nothing to do with what Lane Kiffin said or did on Twitter, even if it was a complete coincidence, guess what? Napier still did something different. And that gives me real proof, real reason to believe that he has found something now. He has found another tactic that he can go to. And I mean, I still have to give my thoughts on the guys that we landed. I'll do so, I guess, in a little bit later on down the road, if not on this pod, because this is already over an hour now. I'll write about them. But I mean, Florida landed talented kids. These are not class stuffer, so to speak. These are not guys to get the class ranking up higher on 247's boards just because you have more commits. There are 2-3 stars, and you know, we've talked about the fact that offensive linemen are the most difficult position to judge and evaluate. So you're gonna have more 3-star offensive linemen than most other positions percentage-wise, but everyone else is a blue chip. Every other player is of consensus 4-star caliber or more. And a lot of these guys, not only are they 4-star caliber, they're direct head-to-head wins over rivals. And even the 3-stars, even 3-star offensive linemen. LSU wants a 3-star offensive lineman really badly. You don't get him. Florida gets him. Georgia wants a 3-star offensive lineman really badly. Too bad. Sucks for you. You don't get him. Florida gets him. These are head-to-head wins. And this is what has to happen for Billy Napier and the Florida Gators, because guess who the Florida Gators are going to have to beat on the field to get back to the levels that they want to get to? These teams. So it's beating these teams out for these players. You do it enough times, and I think we're going to see the results on the field change. And we'll talk about that, I guess, in a different pot. But it has to start here. It has to start with his different approach on the recruiting trail, because we talked about how he has great quality of players, but it's not quality over quantity. You need both. And well, Chris, now we have it.
Yeah, we definitely have it. Now Florida is up to over 15 commitments in this class. We're still waiting for the services to fully rate Noel Portnyagin. When they do, our rating will go up slightly in number, but we will need to see this continue on. And I think we're going to have an opportunity to do that with the likes of potentially a flip of a Chance Robinson or a Jeremiah Smith or the commitment of a Josiah Trader, who is currently on campus right now with his teammate Jeremiah Smith, with Billy Napier. They're continuing to get these guys back on campus more and more and more, which is great to see. And then, you know, you look at a guy like Jerae Hawkins, who now today moved his commitment date back from June 26th off his Penn State visit up to July 1st. And I think right now many people are saying he's going to trend to Florida. That right there would give Florida the number two class in the country just with his commitment alone. And I think there's a lot more to come. This weekend proves to me that Billy Napier can be the elite recruiter, the guy that's going to go out and get a guy to commit on a visit. It's very reminiscent of what Urban Meyer did back in the day at Florida. So we're going to have to see this continue on and on. And we're going to need to, obviously, these guys to sign. We need a top five class. I mean, right now we have the number two class in the SEC. I would say we need to remain at least top three to be competitive in this newfound SEC that's going to be in existence in 2024. So this is huge. All of this is, you know, a lot of fans are panicking and they looked at that schedule and they're like, dang, the recruiting's not looking great for 2024. It's not quite where we need it to be yet. And then boom, answer. This happens. Now you have confidence going into next year with this. If we're able to hold this player average, if we're able to hold this ranking, then Florida is in incredible shape to make moves for next season. And I think what this also allows, and people haven't really brought this up, but if we have over 15 guys now committed for the 2025 class. If you were able to get nearly all of them committed by the end of the summer, I think we'll probably be in the 20s by the time football season starts. Let's say that's the case. It allows you to focus on those few elite prospects like a Jeremiah Smith, who's going to go all the way to early signing day. And it allows you to get a head start on 2025. Because that's really what Friday Night Lights is now becoming, is it's becoming an event where you bring those guys in and start getting a head start on the next year's class. And that definitely matters. But we're going to need to see that continue. And the fact that we're able to get these many commitments this early in the year is huge. And just as I say that, LSU just hit a three-run shot.
And now it's 5-2.
It's 5-2 LSU, so we might have a game tomorrow. This is the
That's what we need, man. We need them to beat up Wake pitching. Yes. Ultimately, I would prefer LSU, but if LSU is going to go down, I'd rather them at least take a game off of Wake and go down battering their bullpen a bit. So we can maybe – oh, and they're showboating too. Look at that.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love the energy. This is great. But to put a close on football, I love the energy happening right there right now. And let's hope it continues on into throughout the summer. We will keep you updated as that happens with more recruiting news. Yep. Really quick, Neil, before we wrap up for the night, want to make an announcement. Florida Gators now will be reporting to fall camp on July 30th. They will have scrimmages on August 10th and 18th. They will begin prep for Utah on the first day of classes, or the day after the first day of classes, on August 23rd. Classes at UF resume on August 22nd for the fall semester. So it's getting real. When pretty soon, Neil, I think in about another month or two, we're going to have our State of the Program podcast, which is a megazode. That was when I joined the team almost a year ago now. And it's been one heck of a ride. But I'm loving that we've got some great things to report on, and today was a really positive podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great to have you, man. You've even gotten paid for some of your efforts with us. It's always nice to get paid for what you like to do.
You know, it's all about you know, doing things for the love of the Gators, and that's what it's all about.
Nah, man. I mean, you've been a great addition. I mean, I knew just listening to you hosting that Spaces back over a year ago with I think it was with Dave Soderquist, actually, who I don't know if we want to spoil it, but now that I already said his name, we can probably go ahead and just say when we do have the State of the Program address, we'll be having him back. We're going to be returning the favor with the High Top Sports guys and having them on our show to do the State of the Program address at some point, I would say a week or two after the College World Series ends and we wrap up that Gator baseball season. I mean, Chris, there's just so much to talk about right now. We got absolutely bombarded with news. This podcast is well over an hour. I haven't even given my thoughts on six of the seven guys that committed, and we're at an hour five already with this pod. Like, we just have so much to talk about. I guess I'll write about it, and maybe we can go more into the X's and O's on a future show, because Chris, we have a lot of guys that do so many different things that just make them so special and that can make the Florida Gators the program that they're supposed to be. That's in the SEC championship game consistently. That's, I mean, now that we're going to have a 12-team playoff, we can say in the playoff consistently, hopefully competing for that Final Four national championship game on a fairly consistent basis, and just being one of those final teams standing at the end of the year. Florida's off to the start it needed to be off to on the recruiting trail to build that team. And you know what? If Napier learned something, if he had a fire lit underneath him, if it was just a coincidence and he just had a change of heart and just decided, you know what? No, I got to start being more aggressive and just going for the kill and finishing the commitments. Whatever it was, something changed and it's working. And the Florida Gators are going to be better off because of it. And Chris, We call ourselves the everything school, but we don't make any bones about it. We don't attempt to kid ourselves. Football is king. Football is the number one sport at Florida. So we love all the sports. We have talked ad nauseum about baseball throughout the course of the season. And on this very pod, baseball had 40% of the airtime. But the Florida Gators need to be good in football for the Florida Gators fans to be happy with the Florida Gators. And right now, the things that need to happen for that ultimate goal to be reached are happening.
Think about this for a moment. Todd Golden pulled in the number one transfer class for basketball. The Florida Gators are the hottest team right now in college football recruiting, and college baseball is playing for the national championship this weekend. The Big Three sports, while they're not all back to where they need them to be, they're trending in the right direction finally. So this is something that we're going to continue to report on, continue to talk about on the podcast, as Neil mentioned, continue to write about, and also put out on all of our social media. So with that, I want to make sure you all are following us on those outlets. Make sure to go on Twitter, search All Kinds Weather, search All Kinds Weather Recruiting. We also have our In All Kinds Weather Forecast Twitter handle on there where we drop all of our podcasts. Make sure to follow us on our newfound YouTube channel, In All Kinds of Weather Forecast. And then we also still have the original In All Kinds of Weather YouTube channel where you can relive some of those old Gator glories and see some of those highlights up. And baseball highlights, as Neil wants to point out, baseball, get you ready for the action this weekend. And then also, please read our stuff on our website, inallkindsweather.com. We do a great job of breaking down and analyzing what these commitments mean. We break down baseball, we break down all sports, and we want to give you more of an analytical and storytelling lens, more so than I think than any other blog out there. So we're very proud of the work we do here, and we're going to keep bringing it to you as the news comes over the next weeks, months, and years. And with that, Neil, we'll go ahead and give it a close. This has been a great episode of the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast. I'm your host, Chris Yanes. Go Gators. Let's beat either the Tigers or the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. And safe travels, Neil. Safe travels to Omaha.
Thank you. I'm actually going through Des Moines, which is going to be fun because it was $430 less than go through Omaha. But you're wishing me safe flights and safe driving because that's about 2 hours from Des Moines to Omaha. But yeah, sounds man, it'll be fun. Experience of a lifetime.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. So long. Go Gators.
Go Gators.